Hello, and welcome to another episode of This is the Greatest Song I've Ever Heard in My Entire Life, a podcast about the music we love and why we love it. I'm Scott Interante, and joining me, as always, Catherine Moore. Catherine, it's a big week.
It is a big week. 420, what else?
Sure, yep.
We'll just get into it. It was Taylor Swift release week on Friday. Yeah, so
it sure was.
We have 31 new Taylor Swift songs.
Yeah, it's a lot. So I've been trying. I mean, I have listened to all of them, I think at least twice, but it feels like it's just a lot. And frankly, like Midnights was a lot too. And I don't think I really ever wrapped my arms around that one. I mean, when it came out, I was dealing with like a dying cat and Carly Rae Jepsen came out at the same time. And so like
a dying cat and Carly Rae Jepsen.
It's just like, stuff. Yeah, I just, you know, I feel like I've never really given a lot of those songs a fair chance.
Yeah.
And so this one, you know, I'm trying to listen to all of it, but it is a lot. And frankly, a lot of them have like, I don't want to say they all sound the same, but it's kind of at a similar intensity level for.
Yeah, I actually think it makes it like pretty cohesive in my mind. I was worried with 31 songs, and I think there is like a pretty clear divide between whatever the original TTPD and then the anthology tracks, I guess is what we're calling it, which was the 15 additional tracks that she put out at 2 a.m. The night of the release. But I've heard it said, and I think I agree with this, that the original TTPD, so the original 16 tracks, kind of follow, well, they're mostly produced by Jack Antonoff. The second half is mostly produced by Aaron Dessner. And so I've heard it said that the first half is for the quote-unquote Midnight Girlies, and the second half is for the quote-unquote Evermore Girlies.
Yeah.
I think that's right. And I think I happen to be both of those types of people, because I was going to say when you're talking about Midnights, I actually just decided today that I am a Midnight stan. So I think we're like very opposite on that. And it took me till this album came out to really like come to terms with that, because I just really like the sound of Midnights. I liked dissecting some of the lyrics. This takes it one level deeper with the dissection, and I don't really know how much I care about it in terms of like getting it totally perfect of who everything is about, because I don't think that's the point. I do think there's a lot of highs on this album in terms of like good stuff. I think there are some lows and maybe like lows, but like I think the highs are pretty high, and I think there are some really good stuff here.
Yeah, my sort of general first impression is that I think the percentage of tracks that I liked on first glance is higher than it was on Midnights for me.
Interesting,
especially,
yeah,
like you said, the anthology songs. I think that's definitely more my speed. But, you know, it's even on Midnights, you get those songs that are like Bejeweled or whatever, where it's like a big, upbeat, catchy chorus. And even if I find that song kind of annoying, it's like, okay, here's like a big chorus.
Yeah.
I don't like criticizing something for not being what it's not. You know, it's like this album is not that. It's not trying to be. It's not like she has big choruses that suck. It's she doesn't have big choruses. And like, this is just a different vibe. In my opinion, like you said, you know, the lyrics, all the parsing isn't the point. I think it kind of is on this. Like, I think that is what she's doing. And like, you know, if the concept of this 31 songs is like, hey, here's 31 mostly unedited diary entries, like, I guess that's a concept. I don't know that it's a concept I'm particularly interested in, but like, obviously a lot of people are with Taylor. Like, I kind of wish, you know, we can get back to the days of I don't know. I don't want to say writing songs, but like some of these don't even really feel like
Max
songs.
Martin is really what I want.
Yeah. But exactly.
And I've seen a couple other like comments on this that I thought are interesting that I just wanted to bring up. And I don't know. I should have like actually noted who tweeted this or whatever, but people are kind of likening this to George Lucas and how the first three Star Wars films were really good because he had people editing him a little bit, editing his like big broad ideas, versus the second three films, the prequels, just kind of got, in their opinion, out of hand.
Exactly.
Because now he's so famous and no one really wants to tell him no. And they said that was akin to Taylor, where she just has probably some yes men in Jack Antonoff and Aaron Dessner and other people who are just kind of like pushing her along instead of pushing back. And I do think there is something to be said with that with Jack. I think they've kind of both reached the end of their new and inventive ways of working together.
Right.
I think there's a couple of things. I think it's people are asking for these more bombastic, I knew we were trouble-esque, you know, Max Martin songs versus the Jack Antonoff. Although I Can Do It With a Broken Heart is a bop. Like, I think that's...
There are
still some bops. It's just more of the contemplative vibes there.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, I don't want to just like lay all this at Jack or whatever. Like, I totally agree what you said about the Yes Man thing, you know, but it's like thinking about Cruel Summer, which, you know, was on Lover, but then became this single many years later. Like, that's such a huge, catchy chorus. And like, that's her and Jack. Yeah. This, again, it's like, that's not what this album is. And like, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do kind of think it's time to move on to like a new challenge or something else. You know, you could be the most brilliant musician in the world and still, like, the point of a producer is to say, like, hey, I think we can get this better. And when you're rushing out, because it does feel rushed, right? Right. We're talking 31 songs, but Midnights came out a year and a half ago, and then she's been on the Eras Tour. Speak Now and 1989 Taylor's Version have been released, the Eras Tour movie. Like, she's been busy.
Yeah.
When were you writing all of these? And maybe we can slow down a little, you know?
Yeah.
It's okay. Well, you're still the biggest artist in the world.
I also think it's interesting because as you dive into the lyrics, and this is, again, kind of stuff that I am coalescing from a lot of different places, so I'm not coming up with this on my own, but that Maddie Healy, who people are purporting a lot of these songs are about, it's not just that they had a fling for 2 weeks, you know, last May. It's that she and him have had this kind of path and journey of on again, off again, since 2014, for 10 years. And so I think that's a really interesting thing to lay at our feet if you read into the lyrics to that, to say, you know, this has been a situationship or whatever, but also kind of thinking through when a situationship can be one of the greatest loves of your life. And then also doing a little introspection of her own way that she's reacting to it, way that she's feeling brokenhearted, whatever it might be. And so it also feels like this massive body of work in some ways where this has been kind of simmering in the background for a long time because it's been this on again, off again. And she was finally ready to kind of poke fun at it, but also talk about it. And I wonder why now. I think it is a question of like, we rushed it out. Why? And like, what is coming next that we needed this 31 songs to be like putting the Maddie Healy of it all to bed, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess like if you are thinking about it as her sort of careerist businesswoman, like whatever, which she is, and I say that with all the love in the world, but you know, so if she's thinking, oh, now I'm with Travis Kelce and like we have this incredible relationship, like this is the next chapter of my life, and like, you know what, whatever PR or spin on it or not, like it seems great, and we're all very happy for her. So if she's thinking like, well, that is the next era, then it does make sense to sort of, okay, I've kind of got to rush this one out, close this chapter with Joe and Maddie, and like, I guess that makes room for whatever comes next. But it does, you know, it kind of sucks when you have to like think about art like that.
Oh, I agree. And she still has two more of her re-records to release, Reputation and Debut. And you know, Swifties are Swifties. They're always looking for, like, when is this going to happen? There's two Friday the 13ths left in the year. One is in September. One is in December. The theory is that she puts out Reputation the 13th of September and Debut on her birthday.
On her birthday.
The 13th of December.
That would totally make
sense. And so that is also the thing where it's like, okay, and then she's done with her re-records. She's done with that chapter, and so there is that kind of closing the door on it too, if that's to be believed. So we'll see if that's true, but yeah, I think she's put a lot out there, and I think there is like poking fun at that. She says like, I cry a lot, but I'm so productive, it's an art. Like, I think she's I think she's like acknowledging and being meta about it in some respects too, where she's maybe even thinking like, I just got to put it all out there and then close this chapter, and then we'll see what's next. So
yeah, and I think some of the like more meta songs, or like, you know, But Daddy, I Love Him, which is sort of poking fun at the fans, like that.
Yeah.
That really feels like a tease up Reputation.
Yeah.
It's not a path that like I really want her to continue going down, because it, everything just starts to feel like snake eating its own tail or whatever. Yeah, pun intended, I guess.
Well,
with the
snake but, eating its own tail. Yeah. Oh.
But yeah, you know, I look, it's still very early. Like, I hope that I can continue to listen to this album and like more songs. I think I kind of want, I'd never do this, but I kind of think I'm going to make a playlist like of my own version of it, of just like,
yeah,
the 12 songs that I want to listen to, you know?
The edited version, if somebody told her no.
Well, we do have a regular episode to get to that's not about Taylor Swift.
A great one.
It's fun to do these episodes where we talk to like people that we don't know who we admire. Like, that's a lot of fun. But the conversation is also really fun when it's people that we do know. And so in this case, Gab Bolin, she's the host of the Movies to Watch Before You Die podcast. She's also like a fitness influencer, I guess. And she's also someone that I've known for 20 years. So it was just like a ton of fun to chat with her about music and listening to music in high school, because like I was there for it, you know, so.
Yeah, you got to check yourselves a little bit with fact checking a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah, so I guess we should just get right into it.
Yeah.
Gab, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I have been waiting for this call for way too long. I'm so excited.
Yeah, well, you know, you've had me very graciously on two episodes of your Movies to Watch Before You Die podcast. So I have to return the favor and get you on here.
Well, I think in fairness, you have a lot more to say, I fear, about movies than I think I do about music. So I'm like hoping that I can hold up the way that, you know, you came through for me.
We like to have a diverse group of backgrounds, you know, on this podcast and different perspectives, because, you know, you don't have to be like a professional musician to have a relationship to music, you know, like everyone has a relationship to music. So even if you don't think that you can articulate it the same way that someone else can, like, but you still, you know what you like and you don't like and
why. You are able to pick a favorite song. So that deems you worthy to be on this podcast. So
exactly.
Well, thank you. And it was an easy pick, so I feel like I'm at least enthusiastic. Yeah.
We're going to get into it.
Well, yeah, so not to spoil it, even though everyone can see what song it is based on the episode title, but, you know, to go back to, like, that era of when you were getting into music, let's say elementary school, middle school, like, what was the stuff that really first grabbed you and made you excited about music?
So there was a period of time when I was very, very young where I lived with my grandparents, my mom and my dad, and I lived with my grandparents, and my grandma would just buy me CDs, like, apropos of nothing. No, like, did I like it? Did I not like it? It was just like, here, this is what you're listening to. Mm. And it would be anything from like Simon and Garfunkel to Boys to Men to the Sabrina the Teenage Witch soundtrack. It was just random CDs in my Walkman. And I just started consuming and consuming and consuming. And I got to a point where, you know, it was the mid to late 90s. And so boy bands were like all the rage. And I fell madly and passionately in love with NSYNC. And so it kind of from that point on, it was just like pop music. It was Britney, Christina, Mandy Moore, NSYNC, not so much the Backstreet Boys, because it felt like I had kind of chosen my team in that, you know, my dog in that fight. But like anything, even like the Simon and Garfunkel, the Eagles, Aerosmith, like older music that maybe was what we would classify, I don't want to say classify as pop music at the time, but what was popular at some point.
Sure. Yeah.
I was obsessed and I loved music, and it's been such a huge part of my life for so long, but it really, like, that sound, that very like pop bubblegum produced music is, even now, it like is just something I'm chemically addicted to.
That good Max Martin producing, like, that is just
yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
Good.
Did you have a favorite NSYNC member?
You know, were
you
I
a
did.
Lance girl? I feel like
I was a Joey Fatone girl.
Oh wow.
I should have known that.
History has been very kind to you. That is, or you're on the right side of history with that one for sure. Not that Lance Bass is a bad pick. That was my pick, but anyone who wasn't a Justin girly, I'm like, wow, that's really impressive.
Yeah, I loved him. You know, he was just like the right amount of non-threatening that just really spoke to me.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And still to this day, I mean, he's great. You know, I think he takes some leaps with his music where he'll go on Instagram and start singing Broadway songs. And I'm like, no. You don't have to do that. It's okay. We know.
So, yeah, I mean, moving forward in time, I know you and I met through doing musical theater, and that was like always a big part of your life. Was there like something specific that made you get into that, or was it more like you wanted to perform and that was the venue for it? Or I actually don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think growing up, because I loved music so much and I was able to hold a tune even as like a child, I wanted so badly to be a singer. That was all I wanted. And so as I got a little older, you know, my grandparents would take me to see like community children's theater and just like go see musicals and, you know, whether it was on Broadway or local stuff. And I was just so interested in what was happening when the actors left, when they exited the stage, like, where were they going? What were they doing? Were they like, was it fun? Were they practicing? Were they high-fiving? Like, I just wanted to know. So when I got to middle school, I was like, I have to do this. And I did some community theater. I did some school theater, which is how you and I met. And I just felt like whatever was happening off stage, it was what I wanted to do with my life. And so I actually ended up going to school for theater. And it really wasn't until my like early 20s when I was just like, I'm not cut out for this for so many reasons, but not the least of which is like, I just don't love it the way that I used to.
Yeah.
It's equally important, yeah, to find out what you don't like as what you do like. And that's not a bad thing to find out about yourself.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like heartbreaking, you know, it was just like, meh, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, before we like continue on chronologically in your 20s, I do want to backpedal into high school and apologize to you and to everyone that I was a jerk to you about Lady Gaga and you being into Lady Gaga. I would tolerate it because it was your car that we drove in. So you got to pick. Yep. And there were, you know, I feel like even at the time I liked Summer Boy and some of the others, but in general, I had a bad attitude about it and I was wrong. And so here,
why? What was your reaction? Was it like pop music? Was it like,
yeah, I was just a jerk about all of
it. But like, would you have done the same for like Rihanna at the time? You know, like who were the other like big pop people at the time?
Yeah, Gab is shaking her head vigorously.
I
guess I'm specifically calling out Lady Gaga because that was at that time what you were like really, really into. But I had that attitude about most of it.
Kesha, you hated.
Oh God, I was so wrong about that too.
Maroon 5, you hated. Which, by the way, Songs About Jane is one of the greatest albums of all.
Yeah, Songs About Jane is different than 2010 and beyond Maroon 5. Let's just make that clear.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Songs About Jane is a perfect album. Yeah. And if this were titled the greatest album I've ever heard in my entire life, I'd be on here fucking talking it up.
Wow. So we should have like 25 more versions of that from Maroon 5 instead of whatever they have, Telephone Song or whatever.
They sold out. It's gross. I hate it.
I don't know. But yeah, whatever. It wasn't until when I left to go to college and then it was the VMA, the 2009 VMAs, which, spoiler alert, or, you know, teasing, later this year, Catherine and I might be doing a special little episode about 15th anniversary of the 2009 VMAs. But that performance, obviously, of Paparazzi, everyone talks about. But, like, I was like, okay, I was wrong. Yeah. There's someone cool here. So I'm sorry, you know?
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Gab, are you still a Lady Gaga fan? Like, she hasn't done a ton recently except for the acting stuff. But, like, did you like Chromatica? Like, what's your temperature on Lady Gaga?
So we'll have to kind of talk about my relationship with music in like that time period, because it's actually kind of interesting how I like almost didn't really consume music in the same way for a period of time. But I have to be honest, even outside of that, listening back, I just don't think anything hits as well after Born This Way. Yeah. I just think after that, it got, I don't know, it lost me a little bit.
Yeah, you're not alone on
Although, you know what? I know we're not supposed to say it, but that fucking song with R. Kelly rocks. Sorry.
We don't have to dig into that. So but she did release a version without R. Kelly. So we can just appreciate that version.
All right.
And I will say right here, right now, it won't be the last time I say this on this pod or everywhere in my life. The Joker 2 Folie à Deux, film of the year. Gaga as Harley Quinn.
Okay, sure.
I'm all in.
Is this is this like an ironic statement from you? Like, I feel like...
No, this is, I'm all in on Joker Folie à Deux.
Okay, but you were all in on Cats in 2019. So, I like...
Yeah, and that stock has really paid off well.
Okay, all right. All
I'm fine with admitting I'm wrong. And if Joker Folie à Deux comes out and it sucks ass, I'll say it. But I think it's going to be great. Lady Gaga, Oscar. So... thinking about now, you know, what have you been listening to? How have you been listening to stuff? Like, is your relationship to music different now?
Yeah. After I left the performing industry, I got really into fitness. And that's kind of the space that I live in now, both as my career and my like passion in life. And when I first started, I was doing indoor cycling classes. But that really changed my relationship with music because all of a sudden music was BPM and it was, you know, climax, and it was very calculated to create a playlist for a class that had a storyline and an arc and teaching people how to listen to music and how to hear a beat drop coming. And so when I was in the thick of that, I would not listen to music outside of work.
Yeah.
I would get in my car and listen to like political talk radio, anything but music. It didn't matter what it was. I just did not want to listen. And that lasted for a couple of years where music was not an enjoyable thing anymore. It was very much work. And so then as I kind of transitioned out of indoor cycling and into the style of, you know, CrossFit and fitness that I'm in now, you don't really listen to music when you train. It's very much background noise. So this idea of listening to music for pleasure, yeah. I'm sort of in my like musical renaissance now where I'm listening to a lot of things that I wouldn't have listened to for many years. And a lot of it is like throwbacks and listening to music that was popular during like the Y2K period. But a lot of it is like Mumford and Sons and Taylor Swift and Foo Fighters and all of this stuff that wouldn't traditionally work in a fitness class. And I'm really fucking loving it. And it's so nice to consume music for fun. And honestly, the reason that I chose the song that I chose is because it's really the only song that has kind of lasted throughout my whole life as a any place, anytime, like forever, this song is the one.
That's a great segue.
Yeah, that's couldn't have written it better ourselves. So Gab, what is the song that makes you scream, this is the greatest song I've ever heard in my entire life?
Well, that would be the 1997 classic from the one and only Third Eye Blind, titled Semi-Charmed Life.
Amazing.
What a pick. Do you remember hearing this for the first time, or it was just like there was a time where it was kind of ubiquitous, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, I have a vague memory of being in the back of my mom's Camaro driving to Jones Beach and listening to this song and being like, we're going to the beach, you know, like life is good. The wind in my hair, not a care in the world. But
you had a semi-charmed life.
Yeah. But I think by 1997, my mom didn't have a Camaro anymore. I don't know that we really went to the beach more than like once or twice in my life. So I don't know how much of this fabricated from like the love of the song, but that's the memory that I have somewhere.
That's totally fair. Yeah. So this is the first single from their first album. I don't know if your like appreciation for Third Eye Blind goes beyond this song and like Jumper or whatever. Were you like into the whole album? Did you have this CD?
No. I know the history and I know how much everybody fucking hates Stephen Jenkins and what a narcissist he is and all the people that have said terrible things about him and refused to work with him. But outside of like the hits, I'm not like a Third Eye Blind fan. And, you know, I don't think that they went too far beyond like two albums, right? Because it was, they just couldn't hold it together.
Yeah. You already talked about like being in the Camaro on the way to the beach, but what's your kind of like, where does your mind go? Where's the ideal place to listen to this song? Like, what is it about this song that's really kind of driving you to that like greatest song of all time?
This song is so fucking happy and upbeat. And it just brings so much joy to every listen. It is such a feel-good song. But I think the thing that I love the most about it, especially as an adult, is the content of the song, right? Like the lyrics and the messaging is really just about chasing a high that you will never get. Yeah. And it's there's parts of the song where he's chasing the future, and there's parts of the song where he's chasing the past, and he's just so desperate to be happy, like he feels like he could be or maybe once was. And it's just like, I fucking feel that so hard.
Yeah.
Like, it's like this put upon, like, I just want to be happy. I just want to feel as good as this song makes me feel. And I've never been addicted to drugs, but I do feel like this song is exactly what that would feel like.
Yeah, I really like how you put that, because I think it's kind of simplistic when people are like, you know, that song is actually about crystal meth. Because, like, it is, but I think it's much more about what you were saying. It's like, it's not about crystal meth. It's about chasing that high.
Yeah.
And the tone of it is so, it just makes me want to do karaoke, you know? I don't think I'm skilled enough to do this song at karaoke, but it's a lot of words.
You have a good falsetto. You could. It's a lot of words, but your falsetto is there. I think what I also love about this song, like in the context of music, is if you really think about 1997, it was like there were kind of two styles of rock that were really popular. There was grunge, right? Mm-hmm. There was also like the Chemical Brothers and this like electro rock thing that was happening. And then you've got these like grown men going doot, 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 doot. And it's like, it's just, there's something about it that's just so like anti-establishment in terms of rock music. And I just think that's dope too, because we had like NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys and then fucking Third Eye Blind going doot, 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 doot.
It's true. Yeah. The sort of like late 90s, like 97 to 2003, I think is like its own decade, mm-hmm. you know? And this is right at the beginning where, like you said, we're moving into like this other kind of rock with like Smash Mouth and Sugar Ray and all this sort of like California sunshiny rock that it has like the kind of nu metal and rap influences. Like Stephen Jenkins was like in a rap group before he started Third Eye Blind.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it has those elements, but it's just much more fun than all the sort of grunge and whatever else was like Nickelback, I guess, was sort of coming out at the same time. But
it feels like it doesn't take itself too seriously, which is so ironic, because he literally can't make music anymore because he took himself so goddamn seriously that everybody fucking hates his guts. But, you know, it's a banger. And I think I've always resonated with that idea of like, maybe it's in the past, maybe it's in the future, but like, I got to get it. And there is no getting it, right? It's like, and I think the best part about that song is that while you're singing these words about wanting something so badly that maybe you had in the past or maybe you could get in the future, like you're so happy in the moment because that song is so good. It just brings me, it sort of grounds me in this moment of like, this is the moment. Like I can think of so many times that I've been in the car with that song playing and thinking like, someday I will miss this moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Music has like a really interesting way of doing that too, of putting you in that mindset. And to me, it's less about the lyrics. I'm much more interested in the production and the instrumentation and, you know, the harmony. And so this, exactly what you said, is kind of like, even the instrumentation like supports the message of what's going on the lyrics. They said like some of the bass line and the guitars, like trying to emulate what it's like to be on speed or something like that, where it's just very poppy and happy. And then the other interesting thing I read about this song is that it's supposedly a response to Take a Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed.
Yeah.
And that's where like the doot doot doots come from, is like his song Walk on the Wild Side. And so I thought that part was interesting too, where it's like the San Francisco like version of that song. And like, well, that's a little bit like To me, those two songs don't really like compare or think about things in the same way. So I was still trying to grapple with that a little bit, but I did think that was an interesting part of where the doot doot doots come from, at least.
Yeah.
So.
It's like it's chemical. It does something to your brain. And everybody knows it. Everyone, I mean, I've talked to people before and they're like, what song is that? And I'm like, doot doot doot. And they're like, oh yeah, of course. Everyone knows that song.
They know. Have you ever taught or participated in a spin class that had this song in it?
Yeah, unfortunately. I have. And it never really goes well for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's like just a little bit too long. And number two, nobody likes this song as much as I do. So it really becomes like masturbatory, you know? So there's that. But also there's a very interesting song that is much shorter and a little bit more like electronic and upbeat that samples this song by an artist called Time Flies.
Oh, yeah.
And it isn't as good.
Oh, that takes me back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it doesn't work, but it works for the purposes of like, we're riding a bike to this. It's 162 beats per minute and, you know, whatever.
It's still stuck in your brain. You're the beats are in it. That's funny.
Wow. Well, Gab, thank you so much for coming and talking to us about this incredible song and so many other things. If people want to find you on the internet, check out your podcast, you know, what should they do?
Yeah. If you like movies as much as you like music, you should listen to my podcast. It is titled Movies to Watch Before You Die. My cousin and I talk about movies that are lesser known and argue the merits of them. Scott is a frequent guest. And otherwise, you can find me on Instagram at gab.boland. And that's it. Otherwise, you can find me crashing cars and singing this song.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much. And awesome. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, Catherine. Doot, doot, doot. What do you think? Semi-charm kind of life.
You know, I love this song. Like, I loved even, like, talking about it more. It's just such a bop. It's such a nostalgic hit. Like, I think I had it on an early 2000s radio like she did as well.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't think it ever gets old. What did you think?
Yeah, totally. It's one that, like, I can't remember if maybe I ended up cutting some of this in the episode. But, you know, we were talking about, like, the lyrics and how it really does very explicitly talk about crystal meth. And I think, like, I kind of knew that, but, like, didn't really ever, like, I never listened to the song and read the lyrics until we were preparing for this episode. And it is, like, yeah, it's a crazy song.
And I really think I did hear the sanitized radio edit version. Like, I really don't think I was, like, listening to 99.1, you know, radio station and hearing crystal meth. I think it was.
But it's edited. Like, it comes, you know, he's singing so fast. Like, maybe we just all miss it. I don't know.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, no, it was a ton of fun to catch up with Gab and talk about music.
Yeah.
And, you know, if people out there have thoughts about Stephen Jenkins or Third Eye Blind or Semi-Charm Kind of Life, you know, get in touch with us. Let us know what you think.
And we have a pretty big episode coming up next time. Do you want a preview?
Oh, yeah. 50th episode.
Yeah. 50th episode.
Yeah, I guess we can tease, right? I mean, it's someone who we mention every episode in this outro. If that's, you know,
well, that
maybe I'll just leave it
to
at
like
that.
Three people or two people.
Yeah.
We mentioned this person a lot, and it's another great episode and another reunion of Scott and some middle school friends. So.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we have that to look forward to next week. If people want to find us, they can go to Great Song Pod on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, GR8SongPod. Email us at greatsongpod, GR8SongPod@gmail.com. You can find us on YouTube. Our episodes and a bonus episode are there. And yeah, please like, comment, subscribe. Leave us a review if you're so inclined. That really does help folks find the show. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah, you know, especially for 50th episode, let's get some movement on these reviews on Apple Podcasts or whatever, you know? But yes, Catherine, thank you so much for helping me record these episodes. As always, I want to give a special thanks to Izzy for help with mixing, to Roger for help with our art, and to Skylar Spence, whose song Kratos in Love is our theme music. But most of all, I want to thank you, the listener, for listening. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.